here's the beautiful thing about it. You can develop an internal motivation. You can develop an internal drive.
Winning habits, winning routines, and a winning mindset.
You're the main character of your own life story.
Welcome to the Susan Sly Project, where entrepreneurs rule, startups launch, and the side hustle becomes the main hustle. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Susan Sly.
All right, everyone, side hustlers, we are back for part two of branding, podcasting, and growing your presence with the expert and Oxford University graduate, Jeremy Slate. Jeremy and I were just talking at the break about what the name of his thesis was. So Jeremy, you have to share.
Oh God, this is one of my major mistakes in life, because like if you ever want to sell books, like don't make the whole title a misunderstood word for people, because you're not going to sell any. The only thing that happens is there's a one college here in New Jersey, Montclair State University, that I don't think it happened last year, so maybe they stopped using it, but every year they buy like 10 of them because the students are using it there. But it was called Gnaeus Pompeius Magnus and the Apotheosis of Augustus. That is all in Latin. I took it for 12 years and it was like, what the heck does that mean? Basically what it means is Pompey the Great and the process of becoming a god for Augustus Caesar, which is much, much easier to understand. And probably you could even break that down better, but yeah.
So probably not a good idea to call your podcast that. No.
No. They're going to be like, a bunch of words I don't understand. Next.
That could be a sideshow for you. It's like everyday
life. I tried that, by the way.
Did you?
I tried that as a sideshow. And I'll tell you what, when you're doing something like history driven or narrative driven like that, it takes a lot more preparation and scripts and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, this is a lot of work. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
good plan. All right. Let's talk about people who want to go pro. So, yeah. You know, Casey Adams has been a guest on the show. He's, we have this, Dennis and I keep threatening to do this YouTube show called Sundays at Susan's, because it'll be like Casey, Dennis, Jeffrey, like a whole bunch of people. And I cook on Sundays, and sometimes we'll do like Instagram stories or different things like that. But one of the things with Casey, when he decided he was going to do this professionally, he dedicated over an hour every single week just to prospect. Like it was actually more in the beginning. It was about 5 hours. And now he's had like Elon Musk's mom on his show. He's the youngest person to ever interview Larry King. Let's talk about, what does it take if someone wants to go pro? They want to have a huge show. They want to monetize it. What does that look like?
So the thing I'll say first off is I didn't do it right the first time. So I have a lot of experience from really royally screwing it up. So my first podcast was called Rock Your Life. And it was like, I was in network marketing at that time. So I thought I was like a life coach or something like that. So like, it was kind of like my first attempt at a podcast and, you know, to try and brand myself. And it was just bad. Like, I just like, you know, you can have anything you want and stuff like that. And I'm just like, people that know me, like, know I'm not that kind of person. And the audio gear was like, just not very good. So it was crap. And it was done in about 60 days. So I ended off on that pretty quickly. And it was just unlistenable. It wasn't serving anybody but me. And this was in the beginning of 2015. And then in May of that year, I went and lived in Peru for a month as I did like an exchange trip with Rotary. And it's kind of cool when you like get out of your environment, because you start to think about things a little bit differently. And I was like, all right, well, the thing that was wrong was me and, you know, my unprofessional approach to it. So I took a couple courses. I took three, actually, which was almost a reason to not start. Like, you can take too much study to not do something. But what I finally did then in November of that year is I reached out to the 100 people I most admired. I got some good audio equipment and, you know, I set up a calendar link. I did all that kind of stuff. And one of the things you have to understand, like coming out of the gate, is your show schedule is a promise to the people listening to you. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of one of the first things you have to look at as being a professional. Like, and that even goes to scheduling the interviews. You have to try as hard as you can not to reschedule those, because especially with certain people, like, you could lose that interview and never have a shot at that again. Because there's I had Don Felder on my show, who was one of the people responsible for writing Hotel California. And he said, I have an hour in between gigs and I can call you on the phone. So I had him call into the Zoom line and do it that way. Sometimes you have to be flexible and go for those opportunities. So being a professional is, number one, making the promise to your audience, hey, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you're going to get the Create Your Own Life show. The episodes may be different every week, but you know you can count on it those days. So you don't want to change that promise to your audience, because they start to lose faith in you. And the other half of that is, when you're scheduling guests, you want to hold to those times. when you can. You know, life happens. I had to reschedule somebody yesterday, which I don't rarely do, but we had a massive IT problem yesterday and we had to handle it. So, you know, that got handled. But you try to stick to that as much as possible. The other part is, you know, also looking professional, like having good graphic design. Like you can get some cheap, good stuff on Fiverr, but find somebody to do some good graphic design for you because you want to make sure like this is brand imagery. People need to understand like visually how you represent it and it has to be something that stands out. And then the other thing is audio quality is super, super, super important. As I said, it's something I've always tried to improve, but I did start very basic. So that's really important as well. The other thing is the caliber of who you're talking to and, you know, how you're talking to them. It took me 200 interviews before I really felt like I was really getting good at interviewing. And then you start to kind of develop some skills and some chops around that. So that's really important too. And that's why, like you mentioned, Larry King. The thing I tell people that want to get better at interviewing is don't listen to other podcasters. Listen to people like Larry King. Listen to people like Tom Brokaw. Listen to people that have done this for, you know, 50 years and see how they interview and see how their show flow is. You know, it's not going to quite fit to a podcast, but you can kind of take it and make it your own. And that's one of the best ways that I've learned how to interview. And then consistency. A lot of people get to 20 episodes and quit. You know, you're probably not going to see success until you're to 20, 30, 40 episodes, especially if you're not well-known like I was. So you have to be in it for the long haul. So, you know, there's definitely a lot more around that, but I would say those are the key things that you want to look at if you're approaching it as a professional.
That I'm taking copious notes, Jeremy. and I love, you know, I love what you said, like when there's the people that I was in a hotel one night in LA and the next day I was doing a speaking event with John Assaraf. It was about like 2007, 2008. And I'm just sitting there and I can't sleep. And I turn on A&E biography. It was Natalie Cole. And she said, you know, people look at me, they look at everything I've accomplished, but they only see the glory. They don't know the story. Mm-hmm. People, you know, you, when you're listening to shows or you're watching on YouTube or whatever you're doing, you see the end result. And when I had Jeffrey from JR Garage, he was talking about when they shoot one car episode, how long it takes to go from the shoot to what they put out on JR Garage that's maybe like a 3 or 4 minute video, mm-hmm. right? And you know, there are 1.3 million subscribers and counting, you know, monetizing multiple six figures. And it's great because people have to understand. You might record on Zoom or you might, you know, sometimes Casey, oh my gosh, that boy. You know, I just laugh. Like sometimes his recording is just, you know, whatever. It's not all perfect, but he's an excellent interview. And I think interview and what you said is you make up in, you know, in your quality of the conversation and really listening to people, what you don't yet have in the graphics and the technology and things like that, you know?
No, I would definitely agree with that too. And like the thing that's really cool and that's really, like I said, it's taken a lot of, I guess, experience for me to feel like I've you know, become a pretty good interviewer, but you start to like develop this like sixth sense, right? And you can kind of realize when somebody's like answering a question a certain way, or maybe they're skipping around it or whatever's good, you can kind of look at it and say, hey, there's something there. I want to take a look at that. Let's answer this question, ask this question a different way. Or you may find that the narrative goes a little bit differently than you expected. And you can kind of find out like what's happening there and kind of look at some different things. And you also, one of the things I try to do is approach it without, you know, like preconceived notions. Like I had Jonathan Goldsmith on the show not too long ago who played the most interesting man in the world. And everybody like reads all the blogs about him and they're like, oh, he didn't become famous till his 60s and blah, 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 blah. You know, he acted early on in Hollywood and things didn't go right. So I kind of just, I'm like, so Jonathan, I approached it this way. So Jonathan, I looked at your IMDb account and like, you know, you had nothing in the 90s and the early 2000s. I said, what happened there, man? He goes, well, I became a multimillionaire in network marketing. I'm like, whoa, that's kind of cool. Nobody talks about that. That's pretty successful. And you know, the company later toward the end of the 2000s ended up folding and he went from there back to acting. But I think when we approach things as, you know, like having our own preconceived notions about them, it's really hard to get a chance to learn about the person because he looked at it and he's like, you know, other people's definitions of success said I wasn't successful. He goes, I was pretty darn successful. I was speaking all over the world and making a whole bunch of money in this time people said I wasn't successful. So I think it's really important to approach your interviews like that too.
That's beautiful. And what is something, speaking of that, like what is something you wish when you're a guest on other people's shows, which you are often, what is something you wish people would ask you that you never get asked?
I don't know, because the nerd in me like instantly starts thinking about things like Alexander the Great and the Borgias and Lorenzo Di Medici, and your audience is now shutting off this episode. So I don't know, like that's usually where my interests go, but it wouldn't be very good for the people listening.
Well, it might be, because the third biggest audience for this show is actually in Europe, right? So there you have it. I could totally geek out. So I watched like all the Borgias.
Which version though? There's a good version and a version that wasn't, that ran out of money and they only had two seasons. The Showtime one only had two seasons.
It might have been the Showtime version, which is
the
good
way
version.
Better version. There's a way better version, because the Showtime version has Jeremy Irons playing
the Pope.
Pope Alexander VI. But there's another version that has three seasons and different characters, and they actually got an Irish guy to play Cesare, and he's a total badass. So like, if you get a chance to find that one, I think that one's just called Borgia, whereas the other one's called The Borgias. So if you get a chance, it's really good. It's on Netflix.
I'll make a chance. How does that get? it's so funny. I think now that, you know, we're all at home a lot more, and I like to be mentally very stimulated. So I can't watch stupid, and I can't listen to stupid. And there's like, people will be like, oh, do you watch that show? And I'm like, kind of in my mind, I'm like, if it isn't challenging me, then I'd rather be doing something else. If that makes sense.
The thing I'll say to that is that I have seen every episode of Friends twice, so that's not quite that stimulating and challenging, but very entertaining.
Are you kidding? There's a lot of, you know, very important messages, like Ross and Rachel, what happened, and like, was Phoebe really crazy or was she playing? No, anyway, so yeah.
She's, by the way, the only one that's been married a substantial amount of time, like outside of the show. She's married like for like 35 years, which is pretty incredible.
Oh, you need to have her on your show.
All the other ones have been like married and divorced, married and divorced, married and divorced. Phoebe, outside of Friends, has been married for a long time.
I'm holding out for Jen Aniston to get back with Brad Pitt. But anyway, back to the show. And don't worry, my listeners know. So we do I don't do it with every guest, but in coming up in a few minutes, I'll do it with you. So with my guests, we get to turn the tables or do a challenge. So with Jesse Itzler, I challenged him to a rap battle, and he refused to rap. So I can proudly say I out-rapped Jesse Itzler. Just so everyone
knows.
He's
pretty good. I saw him rap on the stage at 10X.
I know. But he was like, no, I'm not going to do it. I said, okay, I'm winning. That's okay. Like, that's okay. Brandon Steiner was on my show. His claim to fame is he beat Jordan now in basketball. And there's a whole story behind that.
Oh, I've heard him tell that story, and I know Brandon. I don't know how believable that story is.
Brandon's pretty tenacious. He did his first interview, and for the guests, everyone listening. So our friend Brandon, he was ousted from his own company, Steiner Sports, last year as the CEO, the founder, and the board ousted him. He did his first interview coming back with me because we're such good friends, and Brandon is like, I'm coming back stronger. I'm starting three companies at the same time. I'm like, if anyone says the guy sold dirt for $60 million from Yankee Stadium during the recession. Now he's selling the roof of the Syracuse Dome.
He's just an pretty, like, when I think of tenacity and somebody that can do anything, I think of Brandon Steiner. Like, he's a pretty incredible human.
Yeah, he's outstanding. And that's a great lead-in, because thinking about someone listening, whether they are in, we have a big listenership in Nigeria. The reason we do is, Goldsmith, like yourself, for years, I made a lot of money in network marketing. I spoke on the biggest stage in the world in network marketing with people like Pitbull, Tony Robbins. Anyway, there are a lot of Nigerians who listen to the show, a lot of women who are, they're in network marketing, they've got a side hustle, whatever. Let's talk about branding.
Yeah.
If you had nothing and you were like on a street corner in New York and you had to build a brand in 24 hours from nothing, what would your first steps be?
Wow. I think the first thing I would do, and it's New York City, so I think you'd be able to find this, is I'd go find a phone booth and find the phone book in there. And I'd start flipping through and seeing what brands or people I recognize that are actually publicly listed. And I'd start reaching out to some of those people and trying to see how many interviews I could set up in 24 hours. And I would start, you know, setting up some interviews that way and start getting some branding going because people would, you know, get to connect with me. So I think I would try and figure out how to set up a podcast as fast as possible with as little experience as possible using the phone book. Cause I think you could totally do that, especially in New York. Not many places you could do that, but in New York you could, cause they're chained to the phone book, but they're still there. Or phone booth, but they're still there.
I once in Toronto many years ago, so I'd started a new network marketing business and I didn't have money for leads. So I pulled out the phone book. This is a hilarious story. And so I started the white pages. Now, some of you all don't even know what a phone book is. So it's a big book with everyone's phone number and name in it. So I wouldn't know if like the person's name was Andrew, right? Like A. Andrew. I didn't know if it was a man or a woman. So what I would do is I'd stand up, I'd be like on my phone and I'd be like, is Andrew there? And they're like, Andrew, like what? And so I'd know if it was a woman or a man. I'm like, oh, Miss Andrew, my name is Susan Sly. You don't know me. You respond to my ad indicating you're looking to make extra money from the comfort of your own home. And she's like, what ad? And I said, well, you're on my list. So are you telling me you don't need to make extra money? I'm like, you're on my list. You're on the phone book list. That's what you're on. But I mean, hustlers find a way. Like you always find a way, right?
And I will say, like, personally, at least from my experience, like, you know, to the people out there in network marketing, that is one of the best boot camps you can ever get in your entire life on how to run and operate a business, especially from somebody that starts not knowing have not knowing or having any idea what they're doing. Like, I am so grateful for the experiences I had there.
Yeah. And people discount it. A lot of shows, they don't even talk about it. It is such a low cost way to start a business. Like when I started a business and we've developed in that organization, 46 people who've made over $1 million. I started that with about $250. I mean, where else can you do that? Right. And
nowhere.
A lot of people want to be like Instagram famous. They want to, you know, be TikTok famous. Who knows? I just heard as of the date where we're doing the show that Walmart is joining Microsoft in the bid for TikTok. I'm curious.
I saw somebody write that on Facebook and I literally had to go Google that. Cause I'm like, there's no way that's true. And then I found like five articles. I'm like, you're kidding me.
Yeah, I own Walmart shares. So I'm like, hey, great. If you guys want to buy it, Walton family, I can't wait to see what you do with that. I have this vision of people like skipping down the aisle in Walmart, like the frozen food sector. I don't know. Anyway.
They got the rollback sign up. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, you never know. With someone in their brand, mm-hmm. I want to ask you this. There are like 50 million things I want to ask you, but the thing I'm most curious about is my kids. So I have one of my kids is a teenager and she's like, I'm going to be YouTube famous.
Oh.
And I meet a lot of, but she also has a 3.9 GPA at one of the top prep schools in America. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, okay, honey, if that's what you want to do, right? Like go for your dreams and, you know, blah, blah, blah. There are a lot of, I see it a lot, not just with people who are in Gen Z, but I see it with millennials, Gen X. They're like, I'm just going to be YouTube famous or I'm going to be TikTok famous. So they go on TikTok and they do a stupid dance and they think they're going to monetize that. Can we have the discussion about the real world of business? Because it is a hustle. Like,
oh yeah.
What does your day look like? You know, you've been successful in several things, but what does your day look like from start to finish?
Well, I'll just say first off to the I want to be TikTok famous thing. Like the thing I think in this country we are, and I'll say not just in this country but globally, we are obsessed with celebrities, mm-hmm. and I think that we think like once you get famous, somehow you like get money, and it's just not true. Like it's something you can harness to get attention for something else you're doing. So I would say first off to people listening, like that's the thing I would take a look at is how can I use this to promote something else I'm doing. But in terms of like my day, like my fitness is kind of my first component in my day because I know like if I can get my body right, it gets my head right and everything kind of goes well. So I start off with I used to do slow carb, the Tim Ferriss thing, for a number of years. After a while it became really hard to build muscle, so I went back to carbs. But I start out with breakfast first thing. Then I go from there to the gym. I did a workout for gosh, since I was a teenager, called the Max OT, which is pretty cool. You do 80% of your max for 4 to 6 reps. So you build a lot more volume, and you actually, the only reason you can't do another rep is because you physically fail. So I built a lot of muscle that way. So I go to the gym next, I come back and I actually do a 10-minute cold shower, because cold showers are great because they help to get inflammation out of your body. They enhance your immune system. They help with burning body fat. And then from there, I try not to have any book calls before 10 a.m. And the reason is, like, once you get into your calls, like, half your day gets lost. So I try to really get as much stuff done in terms of emails, in terms of projects that I want to do before 10 a.m. And I don't take any calls till then. And something that I've tried to do a lot better with, especially since like the whole COVID thing has hit, is I've tried to stop scheduling calls around 3 or 4 if I can get away with it, because I've been trying to spend more time with my daughter if I can. Because I know, like, having family time with my daughter and my wife is super, super important. So I've tried to make time when I can. Like, you know, 2 days ago around 3 o'clock, I took some time off and I'm on the ground playing Legos with her. Like, you got to kind of figure out how that's going to work. And I was really bad with work-life balance early on, you know, working really early and really late. And I've tried to get better at that. Like, it's never a thing, because work-life balance really isn't a thing, but you got to make that time.
That's outstanding. It's interesting because when I'm interviewing achievers like yourself, Jeremy, I always ask them about their day, because I want, one of the things our listeners know, like, that the organization, the productivity component is always going to come in. Mm-hmm. And there isn't one high achiever that I've interviewed yet in hundreds of interviews that doesn't start their day with either mindfulness, exercise, whatever. I'm the same way. I try not to book any calls before 10 a.m.
Yep.
The last one of the day is often for me at 4:30, and it's the same thing. It's like, get up, exercise, pray, get my head on straight, take some quiet admin time, do my creative stuff. And then, because once they start, they just mm-hmm. go. Yeah. And saying no, right? Yeah. What do you say no to these days?
I've gotten a lot better, because I used to take a lot of, like, those 5-minute or 15-minute networking calls, which turn out to be a total waste of time. So I've tried to get better at, especially when I take appointments, like, you know, what is the outcome here? You know, like, what is the ideal outcome for you? What is the ideal outcome for me? And what's in it for me? Not to sound like a jerk, but I think so many times, like, you give your time away not knowing why. So I've kind of set a lot of ground rules around why I take appointments and, you know, why I won't take an appointment. So that's kind of a really big thing. Another big thing is I absolutely love people. So I'm typically a yes man. So I've gotten a lot better at not saying yes to every opportunity that comes my way, because I like helping people. Because at the same time, you get pulled off of your main jam, and then you start to not like what you're doing. So, you know, I've been there several times. So I've gotten really a lot better at saying, hey, that sounds like a really great opportunity, and I'd love to help you with that. But really, I just don't have the mental bandwidth to do it. So, you know, the one thing is just managing my calendar with calls. And the other thing is making sure, like, hey, not every opportunity is for me.
There is a book called Minimalism. And the author, Greg, his last name escapes me at the moment. One of the best things that I learned from that book is this, how to say no. Like, so to say something like, you know, Craig, I really want to help you and you deserve my 100% with everything I have going on right now. I wouldn't even be able to give you 5%.
Yep.
And I'm like, that is Greg McEwen. I'm like, that is beautiful. Greg will be on my show. He's on my list. So last question, then you get to ask me a question. Command your brand. So, you know, what do you do for clients? Who is your ideal client?
So we're typically working with somebody who's in the CEO or founder role. We also work with a lot of best-selling authors. And really, we aren't a podcast booking firm. We're the PR firm for the podcast space. You know, my co-founder is my wife, who's been in PR for about 10 years. We have a staff of 15 now. And really what we only hire people that have went to school for PR. Because really what we're trying to do is kind of change how a lot of that stuff is done. So we help people to get their message out there in the right way in front of the right people. So we find out who your target audience is. We actually go through a whole coaching process with you to figure out what your story, message, and call to action is. And we also teach content repurposing, because I find it's vital to learn how to use all this content you're creating. It's beyond me when people are on a podcast and they don't, like, share the episode. I'm like, you're kidding me, right? Like, why are you doing this? So we're really kind of going through that whole process to make sure, like, not only are you in front of the right audience, you're delivering in the right way, but also the experience for you is white glove. So that's really what we do at Command Your Brand.
That's awesome. And people can check you out at commandyourbrand.com. They can follow you. I love, it's so easy. Your Facebook, your Instagram, and your Twitter. You managed to get at Jeremy Slate. Only someone who went to Oxford and studied literature could.
Well, it's at Jeremy Ryan Slate, because my parents named me after a cowboy actor, also from New Jersey, named Jeremy Slate. So I had to go with Ryan for that reason.
Sorry, I apologize. Jeremy Ryan
no worries.
Slate. I know. I got on Instagram, it's at Susan Sly, which is awesome. And then Twitter is at Susan_Sly. And then Facebook is at Susan Sly Live. And I'm like, dang.
But just from a branding perspective, it's just really smart to like try and do that, because you're making it easier for people to find you on each individual platform, you know, when possible. Sometimes it's hard.
Yeah, especially if your name is like Bob Smith or something.
Bob Smith just needs to start using his middle name.
Yeah, or whatever. The real.
B. Frederick Smith. I don't know.
Nice. All right. So tables get turned. I don't do this with every guest, but if you could ask me one thing and there's no sacred cows, what would it be?
What is the single thing in your life that if you did not do on your deathbed, you would regret?
The first thing that comes to mind is New York Times bestseller. So I've done a lot of things, and that is something for me. I write all the books I've written myself. And you know, I love how open and vulnerable you are, Jeremy, because you're like, yeah. And the way I did my first book, it was endorsed by Jack Canfield, John Gray, you know, you would think, but I made some decisions. And if I could go back in time, I probably could have taken that one to number one. But you know, you have to do things wrong sometimes, a lot of the time, almost all the time, before you do them right. I want to write a New York Times bestseller, and it really, really focused on serving the people out there all over the world, who want to start a business and visit entrepreneurship. When I travel to Africa, Cambodia, Guatemala, any of the places I've gone, I see all these beautiful people who want to start a business, and that's the community I want to serve. So I have the vision of doing the book, serving this broad community, and making it accessible to everyone, because the money is not like, don't write a book. This is what I want to say. Don't write a freaking book for the money, like, because you're going to get it all wrong until you're like, you know, whoever, Tony Robbins, who can do that. But, you know, write the book for the service, do your podcast for the service. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, you got to figure out a way to sell somewhere between 13,000 and 15,000 books a week consistently for a few weeks, and you'll make that list.
Oh, it'll happen. Yeah. It'll happen, and I know when it's going to happen.
It's all in the pre-sales.
Yep. You know it. Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for being here. For our listeners and viewers, if you're watching on YouTube, comment, because I actually respond to the comments, not like a bot or a VA or something. It's me. So it's me responding to you. On Instagram, if you love the show, you know, give us a shout out, put it in your story, you know, tag us, Jeremy Ryan Slate, Susan Sly on Instagram. On Spotify, iTunes, Jeremy and I would love a 5-star review. And if this show has served you, you've been inspired, please share it all over your social. We would love that. So Jeremy, thanks again for being here.
Hey, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me today, Susan. I had a ton of fun.
All right. With that, everyone, God bless. Go rock your day. This has been another episode of the Susan Sly Project.
To find out more about Susan or hire her to speak, go to www.susansly.com. You can also find Susan on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn.